You are listening to Charmed City, a podcast about interesting people doing interesting things in and around Baltimore. I'm here today with Ari Plusnik. Ari is the community arts liaison for Baltimore's Creative Alliance. In addition to his work with Creative Alliance, Ari is a musician and plays in several bands. And prior to moving back home to Baltimore, Ari spent 2 years in Mozambique working with the Peace Corps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ari, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I guess we'll start with the Creative Alliance and your work with the Creative Alliance. Ari, what is the Creative Alliance?
Sure. The Creative Alliance is a really special multi Arts Community Arts Center located in Highland Town, Baltimore. So Highland Town is a really diverse area, and we have a lot of different communities that live around within mm-hmm. Highland Town. So there are a lot of Latino immigrants, and we have a very old Polish and Italian community that lives in Highland Town. And we're very close to African-American communities as well as white communities that are generally settling nowadays in Fells Point, Camden mm-hmm. area. So the Creative Alliance itself is like I said, a multi-arts community arts center. So what does that mean? It means that we have a theater that can seat about 200 people. It's considered one of the best listening rooms in Baltimore. And we have two galleries. We have the main gallery, and we also have our community gallery upstairs. So our galleries are free of charge, and people can come check them out anytime between 11 and 7 from Tuesdays to Saturdays. Our theater, we have really wonderful programming that includes local artists, two artists from around the world that come to share their art with the Baltimore community at Creative Alliance. In addition to our galleries and our theater, we have a residency program mm-hmm. of about 8 artists who live and work in our space. And in addition to that, we have an education department where we have a lot of really cool after-school programming at different schools in the area, as well as Saturday programming in our building for kids and families. And then, in addition, we have our community arts department, which is where I work, mm-hmm. Which is involved with community events and producing really big community festivals, such as the Kite Festival, which we call the Big Baltimore Kite Festival, World Refugee Day Festival, and our biggest event, which is the Great Halloween Lantern Parade, which generally attracts upwards of 12,000 people.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, to Patterson Park.
And so as the community arts liaison, your role is to, you know, find different cultures and different things to bring into the space?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. I mean, my main job is to really, I'm an earpiece. Mm-hmm. My job is to sit and to listen and to meet with people. That's my day-to-day. People will reach out to me with ideas or say, hey, I really like the Creative Alliance. I have this idea. I really want to do this. And then once I kind of make that initial connection, we'll see what'll work. And then we produce programming that the whole point of it is to show, or it's to give platform to different communities within Baltimore to come and share what they're doing and who they are with communities that are different and amongst themselves as
right.
well.
Right, that's really cool. Yeah. And so it's probably really educational for you as well. You get to experience all these different people, all these different cultures.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I like to think that I'm the one that lucked out the mm-hmm. most with this because I get to do everything. So, like, for example, we have some really great programs through Creative Alliance, such as the Artesanas Mexicanas, which are a group of female women who live in the Highland Town area who are all traditional Mexican craft makers.
Cool.
So I get to work with them and do programs with them. We work a lot with a Haitian cultural nonprofit called Comité Haiti, mm-hmm. where we have very special cultural events through with them, such as Haitian Flag Day. So just because my job is to have people come in and show their art, show their performances, produce events that feel right to them, I get to learn so
right,
much because
sure.
of that.
Yeah, that's yeah. awesome. And so one thing that you just said that sticks out to me is that, like, you work with other nonprofits and other community organizations What are some of those organizations?
Absolutely. So for our Great Halloween Lantern Parade, which is coming up October 26th, mm-hmm. Saturday, we get to work with Friends of Patterson Park, which is a really great nonprofit that is in charge of managing and programming Patterson Park. We work with, just in general, we work with Southeast CDC, which is a community development nonprofit mm-hmm. in the area. And then, like, it differs with, like, different programs. So when we do World Refugee Day, we work with Comité Haiti. We work with Refugee Youth Project through BCCC. We work with Towson University and their YAAS program, which is a program that's involved in getting refugee children from Baltimore to work with refugee students to work with graduate students at Towson University.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and in a, and you know, we have so many partners, Morgan State, we have corporate sponsors that I can't remember because I'm not in the department.
Right.
I'm not in the development department. We also get government and state funding through the National Endowment for the Arts and MSDE grants. So we're really involved in working with a lot of nonprofits because Creative Alliance, the whole point of it is to be a community center. We want to be a place where people can come and feel welcomed and really like learn about other people that are here in Baltimore. When we were talking earlier, we were talking about how, you know, there are so many different communities here in Baltimore. And what Creative Alliance really does well, and what I think is what's so special about Creative Alliance and kind of why it works, is that people in Baltimore, we live in a highly segregated city, mm-hmm. but people in Baltimore are interested in learning about people that aren't like them. And I think that Creative Alliance offers a great space where you can come, and maybe you're coming for a jazz show, but you check out the gallery, mm-hmm. and maybe there's traditional Mexican art in the gallery at the time. So, you know, you're coming to a jazz show, but you got exposed to something that you would have never been exposed to before.
Right, that's awesome.
And so, like, my job is to really try to think, okay, I have a festival or I have an event. Who's going to be involved? What do we want happening? Who is interested in being involved? Mm-hmm. Who's reaching out? Who do I think would be really cool to have as a presence? And then ultimately, you know, people will always congratulate me about, like, you know, oh, that festival went really well. And, you know, I'm not going to discredit myself for the work that I did. Like, mm-hmm. it is, like, good work that I did. But really, it's the fact that people from the community are coming out and sharing what they have to offer
right.
with so many people, especially through the community arts department. So I think that, like, Creative Alliance, especially in this day and age where people globally, unfortunately, in the global West, they're like, cultures are getting more closed off. They're mm-hmm. getting a little more to each their own, not even to each their own, but to mine my own, you know, like, this is how I see the world. This is just what I want to see. And I think that it's so important for us to learn from different people and from different communities that even live so close to us. There's so much we can learn from each other.
Yeah. And the Creative Alliance kind of gets to be an amalgamation of all of that culture. And that's awesome. And it's great that we have a space like that.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you know, one thing you mentioned is that we are an exploratory group of people who live here in the city. But what else is it about Baltimore that enables organizations like the Creative Alliance to, you know, succeed?
Yeah. I mean, I think like the complementary aspect to that of people being a little more open possibly is that we have so much to offer in mm-hmm. Baltimore. There's so many different artist communities. There's amazing like musicians of all sorts, folk musicians, jazz musicians, experimental jazz musicians, prog rock, all sorts of great music. We have great comedy here. We have amazing visual artists, amazing performers. I mean, it's just a really vibrant community. And I think what's great is that, especially when you're talking about the artist community in Baltimore, is that people are excited to share what they have to offer. There's not so much worry about image. There's not so much worry about how much money are you going to make doing this. Mm-hmm. It's more about what are you interested in expressing? What are you interested in doing? Let's do it. And there's so many great venues here. I mean, I see like some of the greatest music venues. or music performances rather, at like venues that some would consider aren't, you know, that chic, or they aren't that, you know, we're not talking Wolf Trap.
Right.
But it's amazing stuff that's coming from the hearts of people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that's just because I'm really involved in the artist community. We just have so many different sorts of people living in Baltimore that, you know, we get to take advantage of that as a nonprofit, you know? As an arts organization, who are we without our artists? Mm-hmm. There's no way to do what we do if there wasn't already this great wealth of talent and beauty and expression that we tap into by offering platform to the artists to people.
So what type of events and what type of shows and what type of art do you see at the Creative Alliance?
Honestly, like anything.
That's
like,
awesome.
It can be anything. You can go to the Creative Alliance, you can see a drag show, you can see folk bands straight out of the Appalachias, you can hear, we just had some great community workshops with a band called Cimarron, which comes from Colombia, and they're like a special type of Colombian, Venezuelan plains cowboy. And
they have a very, that's awesome.
Absolutely. They have like this very virtuosic style of playing. I mean, you see everything. And that's honestly because of the genius of our performance director, Josh Kahn. And also, you know, outside of performances, we get great films by our film curator, Samantha Mitchell. We get really cool artists of all sorts showing in our gallery with our visual arts curator, Thomas. And, you know, just like it's a space where we're not only giving platform to people in Baltimore and surrounding Baltimore areas, but really internationally for the Baltimore community to really engage in. So I would check out Creative Alliance at creativealliance.org. You can see a wealth of information there. You can check out our calendar. We always have shows going on. We're also really special in the way that tickets typically do not get higher, are under $20 and are generally $15. So, I mean, you get some really incredible performances for pretty cheap.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That being said, sometimes, like, if it's a really big band, like, it's
going to be... Yeah, of course.
But it's an amazing space to see some music. And also, like I said earlier, our galleries are totally free. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'd like to invite all your listeners to come by and check it out. Ask for a tour. If I'm around, I'm happy to give you a tour because it's a really, really special place, you know?
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, one of the things you do is a community arts program. What is the community arts program? What are you guys doing?
Yeah, so really, I mean, our main mission, so to speak, through the year is to produce our big community events and festivals. So that includes, like I said, the big Baltimore Kite Festival, which is an amazing thing that we just started this year, where we had over 2,000 people come to Patterson Park to fly kites and just spend a day in the park. And we got to commission kites. It was great. We did World Refugee Day Festival in June, where we invited refugee youth to come and show their art. And we had performances from around the world. And then our big thing, like I said earlier, was the Lantern Parade, which will be Saturday, October 26th. And that is such a cool parade and festival where we get out a ton of people in the Baltimore community and the Baltimore artist community from all different parts of Baltimore to come enjoy a festival where we'll have food, we'll have live performances, we'll have lantern making workshops, and we'll have really beautiful this year, beautiful festival installations that are going to be like really cool.
That's awesome.
And then it all culminates in a parade that is 100% community produced.
Oh, yeah. Dope.
So that means that like different community groups and different schools and different artists that live in the Baltimore community create and we commission these really cool floats that light up in the night. Cool. And then we march with local marching bands and local musical groups. Mm-hmm. And then it finally culminates in a big spectacular finale. And this year we'll be having a dance party right after too.
Awesome.
So it's going to be Saturday, October 26th. Check it out on our website.
I'll be there.
If it rains, it'll hopefully happen on Sunday. And like, It'll be a really great time. So in addition to that, Sam, and I'm sorry for continuing.
No, that's what we're here for.
So in addition to those big festivals, it's really my job to just kind of produce community events through the year. And I'm always meeting with new people to come up with ideas of like, what can we do in the future to get different communities from the Baltimore area into Creative Alliance.
That's awesome.
Experiencing Creative Alliance and sharing what they have.
That's so interesting. That's awesome. Yeah. So one thing I wanted to kind of rewind on, you mentioned that there is eight resident artists at the Creative Alliance.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a really cool program. The artist residency is for about 2 to 3 years, I believe. And the artists live and work in Creative Alliance. So they have a big open plan studio where they typically work, and then a loft where they live. And there's a little kitchenette and bathroom and everything. We have all sorts of artists there. We have painters, we have sculptors, we have a percussionist right now. And it's really about living and working at Creative Alliance to generate this sort of artistic community that is intrinsic to Creative Alliance. So, I mean, it's really cool. We really encourage them to be a part of everything that happens in Creative Alliance. I mean, as part of the program, they get one show in the gallery or one show in the theater if it's, if they're performing artists. And, you know, they get a subsidized rent, and that's kind of the deal. But outside of that, we really like them to just be a part of it. So a great example that I like to bring up is that Jannie Hillman, who is one of our ceramicists that lives and works at Creative Lines, she started to come to the show's sound check, and she'll actually do live sculpting.
That's so cool.
Yeah, of the performers. So each performer gets a little head of themselves, you know. I don't think they keep them, but they get to see it,
yeah,
you know.
That's
and that's
awesome.
Like a really cool example of how the arts kind of come together. And then, like, what's happening is that because she started doing that, she's going to come to one of my shows and come sculpt the people playing
that's so
there
fun.
Too. Yeah, so it's a really cool project she's got going, and it's something that's like so Creative Alliance,
yeah.
Right? Like, who would think like a sculptor at a show, right? But that's what we're going for. We're like making connections, and that's what makes Creative Alliance really interesting, I think.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And like building bridges between different arts and whatnot, and that's really cool.
Absolutely.
So how just so we know, how long has Creative Alliance been around for?
Yeah, Creative Alliance, we're about to go into our 25th year.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. So come 2020, I would really check out Creative Alliance's website and our Facebook page, because we're going to be doing a lot of special stuff in honor of the anniversary.
That's awesome.
And our Lantern Parade is going into its 20th year, so that's also going to be bigger and better.
Yeah, big milestones.
Yeah.
That's great.
Absolutely.
So have you always had an interest in, you know, community work, nonprofit work, and things of that nature?
Yeah, not in the way that like people say, I want to go to medical school and be a doctor.
Right.
You know, I honestly didn't know that a job like this existed, really. The way it came about is I've just always been really interested in other cultures. I've been interested in traveling. I've been interested in languages and music from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of grew up with that. And then when I went to college, I was studying biology, but I started really loving my Spanish classes. So I was like, because I was learning about different cultures in South America, learning about, you know, medieval times in Spain, mm-hmm. like all sorts of stuff. So I ended up double majoring in biology and Spanish. And, you know, through that, I, you know, started listening to like mariachi music that Los Lobos were doing, which is like a band from California, but they were really into their mariachi music. Mm-hmm. And then I started seeing like music. I remember I did a whole project for a class I was taking on China about folk rock in China.
Well, I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, exactly. And then like Mongolian heavy metal, where they like do Mongolian throat singing and play.
Cool.
So I've always had like a marginal interest in that sort of thing, right? And then I was getting out of college and I was like, well, what do I want to do? Before I really settle down anywhere, I really want to live abroad and I want to experience life abroad, because it's just a personal thing. I think that all Americans really need to experience what life is like outside of America,
mm-hmm.
and how other people live and think and you know, live their lives, really. So I was like, what's the best way to do that? I want to, like, learning, picking up another language would be cool, you know?
Yeah.
So it was kind of a natural segue for me to be like, okay, yeah, I'll go to the Peace Corps, you know? So, and then once I went to the Peace Corps, that's what really gave me some real skills in community engagement, mm-hmm. community development, working with people that are very different from me, so that by the time that I got home, I had language skill, I had an interest in culture. I've been a musician my whole life and very active musician as well. So a very real interest in the arts in general, but music specifically, and with the different cultures. And then the community development work.
Yeah.
You know, I was super fortunate that I found the job for Community Arts Liaison on the internet. And I applied not really knowing if I would get it or what. And then I think I lucked out.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
I got it because it really is like a really beautiful synthesis of a lot of my life interests.
That actually is kind of perfect. That's going to bridge us right into the talk, talking about the Peace Corps.
Yeah.
Which is super interesting.
Yeah.
Let's just start at like the most basic level. What is the Peace Corps?
Yeah, so... yeah, before we start talking about this, I just have to mention I'm not a Peace Corps employee. I am not a member of the U.S. government. What I say does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Peace Corps. But as a returned Peace Corps volunteer, I'm happy to talk about it. The Peace Corps is a government program that sends Americans abroad to do work in whatever field or whatever issue that the host country requests.
Mm-hmm.
So that can mean anything. Peace Corps is all throughout the world. We're in South America, Africa, Eastern Europe, Asia, and the Polynesian Islands. And really the whole point of it is countries, through whatever diplomatic relations they have with the United States, request Americans to come for issues. So for instance, they might say, hey, we need more teachers, or hey, we don't have qualified teachers. We need people to come help us learn it, help us train teachers, you know, or in my case, when I went to Peace Corps Mozambique, we need teachers. We don't need people to train teachers. We just need teachers. And then there's health departments where they work in public health and hospitals. Mm-hmm. There's youth and development where they work with, like elementary school kids and just like that. We also have agricultural volunteers that go out and help teach farming practices. Sustainable farming is a big thing. We have environmental volunteers, I believe, small business volunteers. So really, Peace Corps never goes to a country that doesn't want them to go. And that's like a really important point to bring up because, I mean, there are all these issues with like white saviorism.
Right.
The root of it isn't we know better than you, so let's teach you. It's just like we've had maybe more experience to study things academically, who knows, and go in and we can share what we learned. That being said, sometimes what we know isn't what's going to work mm-hmm. in very specific communities and places. But you know, I think the big thing is a lot of Peace Corps volunteers go with an open heart. And honestly, past the work that we do, I think what's really important about Peace Corps is just the fact that Americans go and live in these communities.
Right.
And form really strong relationships, like on the friendship level, sometimes on the familial level. I still talk to people in Mozambique almost every other day, just messaging on Facebook to see how people are doing. Like,
that's great to hear.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. And like, especially nowadays as the world closes itself off, it's this big opening institution that really gets Americans who unfortunately we're the worst at it. Like we're some of the fewest people in the Western world that speak none of us speak more than one language mm-hmm. if you're talking on a statistic level.
Right.
You know, whereas people in Europe speak all sorts of languages. And, you know, culturally, as we're seeing, people are getting more closed off, a little less interested and open to people who are so different. So Peace Corps is so great because it really forces you mm-hmm. to open yourself up. I mean, in ways that you wouldn't even imagine. And then like, you know, and sometimes that's a really difficult experience. You know, of all the positives out of Peace Corps, like I learned Portuguese because I speak Portuguese in Mozambique. I got all these community development skills. I made such great friendships. Like outside of that, it was really hard.
I'm sure. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that the Peace Corps is like one of the hardest things you can do.
Absolutely. Because it just, you're away from your friends and family. So that's hard enough. B, you're living in conditions, and every country is different. So a Peace Corps volunteer in Southeast Africa, where I was, their life's going to look really different than someone in Eastern Europe or someone in like Ecuador, so to speak. Outside of that, like, I was living in like really, really resource depleted conditions. So that meant, you know, no dishwasher, no washing machine. And that's usually a pretty standard in Peace Corps. But out of that, we were getting paid, I think, like $100 a month.
Yeah, that's...
You know, and we were living in a community where that is economically viable.
Okay.
Like, that's the big ethos of Peace Corps, is that we want the Peace Corps volunteers to live like the people that live in the host country. We don't want you to go and, you know, if I lived the way we live right now, I would be the richest man in the whole, like, county area, you know? Just if I was living the way I do right now. Like, which, by the way, if you don't know me, isn't that lavish. you know, so that's the big thing. You kind of experience poverty firsthand, and we're even better off than most people, all things considered, because we do have an income. A lot of my friends didn't have income. They were living with their family and subsisting off of farms and would get work whenever they could. So it's a beautiful experience. It's a very difficult experience, because when you were raised in this country, like, you're not used to that.
Right.
And it can be really hard, and it can be physically exhausting. It can be emotionally exhausting, and you know that's why, like, you know, there's so many positives, but I don't want to say there's a cost, but there's a challenge. There's a major challenge.
Yeah, of course.
Involved.
On like the person themselves.
Absolutely.
And everyone does 2 years, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's a 2 year term, and then you can extend for a third year. And then nowadays they also have Peace Corps response, which is once you're a return Peace Corps volunteer, you can actually go back in for shorter periods for a little more specialized work.
Got
as well.
It. So when did you, I know you said in college you were kind of trying to figure it out. You wanted to study abroad, or you wanted to spend time abroad before like settling down somewhere. But like, what made you decide to do Peace Corps specifically?
I think it was really, you know, it was the ethos of it, the vibe. You know, I didn't want to go abroad and just be drinking in Spain. No offense to Spain. I studied abroad there. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure I could have learned a lot now in hindsight, because I could have learned a ton of flamenco and stuff. But regardless, I wanted like some very real experiences. I wanted some real professional experience as well. And I wanted to learn a new language. And I wanted to experience something that I would never experience otherwise. I can always move to Spain. Uh-huh. I can always move to one of the bigger cities in South America. I can move to China. And it would be a great experience, and I can be comfortable. I would never have a chance where I would just move somewhere where I would be in such a different
yeah,
you know,
for sure,
socioeconomic conditions and stuff. And still be safe, so to speak, because Peace Corps still supports you, you know? So that was a big reason. Also, just the fact that you go away for 2 years, I like really, you know, I had studied abroad, like I mentioned, and while I was in Spain, I made friends and I learned about stuff, but I wasn't really a part of the community there because of the short amount of time. So I knew that I wanted to go away for a long time. And like, you know, Peace Corps sounds good too. So like it was a way for me to get abroad, but also like, you know, still kind of resume building.
Yeah,
a little bit.
And then, I mean, on the return, you were able to, you know, combine what you learned there with what you're doing now, which I think is really awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know you said you were mostly teaching. What was like the day to day, like what was your work like?
Yeah. Yeah. So in Peace Corps, we say we have primary projects and secondary projects. So my primary project was to be a high school science teacher. So I taught biology biology. In Mozambique, high school is actually 8th through 12th grade. So
and you were teaching, sorry to cut you off, but you were teaching in Portuguese,
I was.
Right?
That's crazy. Yeah, I was teaching biology in Portuguese. And like, honestly, I was teaching human anatomy 1 year and then plant physiology the next year. And I just want to qualify that because I did major in biology. I didn't study, I studied that anatomy as an elective in high school and it was kind of like watered down.
Yeah.
I didn't study anatomy until like my 300 level courses. And when I studied plant physiology, it was a graduate level course.
Uh-huh.
And I was teaching 8th and 9th grade.
That's crazy.
In Portuguese. It was like wild. It was like, why does the curriculum have me do this? But I mean, you know, I got it through and that's like, that's because we get such great language training. You know, we get 3 months of training
right
when we get to country for the language and then like, you know, a lot of learning on the job. So yeah, my day-to-day was teaching in the schools biology. And then we did a lot of secondary projects. So I worked with youth groups, one youth group called Juntush, which was boys and girls. Mm-hmm. And really, I also worked with another group we call Grassroots Soccer, which is another organization that works with Peace Corps. And that was for HIV prevention. It's all about that kind of thing. We're like, we're trying to face the problems that Mozambicans face, such as, you know, the HIV rates are very high, malaria rates are very high. There are issues of gender equality. There are issues of domestic abuse, gender violence. And our job is to really just try to help people learn to how to make, like, what decisions are good in terms of preventing contraction of HIV, in terms of preventing malaria, in terms of preventing gender violence, you know? And so that's what we really worked on. So I got to work with a lot of groups through that. And honestly, like, no offense to the primary projects, usually the secondary projects are the one that you
yeah.
do. Yeah. So my Keystone project, which, you know, Peace Corps volunteers don't have a Keystone project, but I like to say that because it sounds official. I got to apply for a grant to get money to record music. And it was this really beautiful cross-cultural project that I did with Hipólito Sandy, who is a Mozambican rapper and singer based out of Maputo. And we were able to get money to record music that was geared towards Mozambican youth. And the way that Mozambicans, you know, every different, what I learned, you know, as a Peace Corps volunteer is that every community has its own way of spreading information and of like learning. So you and I probably we would Google something.
Yeah.
Maybe if we want to learn something deeper, we'd get a book, you know. And Mozambicans generally don't have too much access to books, and they do have phones, but they haven't really like gotten used to the whole idea of Googling and stuff. The way traditionally that they have spread information since, you know, ancient times is through song and dance.
Right.
So learning that and like seeing it in my day to day, I was like, you know, it would be really great to record music that had to do with the work that we're doing. So one of the songs we recorded was about HIV AIDS prevention. One of them was about like xenophobia and that we're all equal and we all can work together and live together. Another was about this really big problem in Mozambique where 14-year-old girls or like younger women usually fall in with sugar daddies who will pay for them.
Yeah.
It definitely puts them in danger of gender violence and everything. So, I mean, that project was really cool because we also did it with my good friend Eric Schwarzenberg, who is a Baltimore artist here. So what we did was I would write the music. I would send him the music, like just on my iPhone.
Yeah.
And like he would record it in his studio, send me the tracks, and then I would give it to Hipólito and he would record his voiceover. So he would sing and he would rap. Mm-hmm. So that's what we initially did just kind of for fun.
Right.
You know, and then I was able to get this grant to make this music for the youth. So we were able to actually go to a studio in Maputo.
That's awesome.
Which was so great.
I'm sure that's an incredible experience.
So we got to record original music. My friend who is from Texas and plays in mariachi music, he was able to play violin. Another Peace Corps volunteer sang over
it.
And then Hipólito rapped over it. He even brought a friend who rapped over it as well and sang. And like, it was a really great project, and you can actually check it out.
It's on Spotify?
It's on Sweet. Spotify and iTunes, so it's called Somos Todos Iguais. In Portuguese, the sound is just an S, so it's S-O-M-O-S-T-O-D-O-S-I-G-U-A-I-S. You can also just search my name, Ari Plusnik, and you can find it. And it's all in Portuguese and one of the local languages of Maputo, which is Xangana. So even if you don't speak Portuguese, it's still probably really cool.
Yeah,
you should totally check it out.
So it's really great to hear that you were able to do some music while you were out there.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about that. Was there any other musical projects you were involved in, or were you able to incorporate, you know, your love for music with your experience in the Peace Corps?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got really lucky when I was asking, you know, when they place you in country, they kind of take into consideration what you might mm-hmm. want to do, and they kind of ask you about that. So I really wanted to go somewhere where they had a Casa de Cultura, which is a culture house, mm-hmm. which I knew after like being in training that that's where like musicians would generally congregate. So in my town that I was placed in, we had a Casa de Cultura, and we actually had a band that played there, which was really great. They're called Banda Revelação, which is Revelation Band. you know, I got to practice with them a lot. I got to play with them a lot. And it was a really great experience because I learned a lot about Mozambican music and what they're into, mm-hmm. Which is really different than our music. I mean, the bass of it is like, which is like the whole song. And it's like, how do you make a song like that? And really, what was cool about it is I had to change the way I thought about music, and I had to change the way I enjoyed music. At first, I didn't really like it. I was like, I don't, it's not that I don't like it. It's just that I don't feel the vibe, you know?
Right.
And then like through time, you like, and especially all the music, even like the like, you know, popular music, it's all just, and it's all about dancing. And then like, you know, you learn about the energy of it. You learn to get into it.
Right.
I got to, like I said, I got to play with them a lot. And I actually got to be able to play a pretty big music festival called Zalala Music Festival.
That's awesome.
Yeah. In Zambezia, which was this huge stage on the beach with huge house sound. It was the best gig I've ever played so far, actually, just because of the production value of mm-hmm. it. It's so random to like 1,000 Mozambicans playing Mozambican music. I just felt so fortunate to have that kind of experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's great that we were, you know, talking about your music and all that. We're going to definitely dive into that in a little bit.
Cool.
Before we dive in, I do want to ask, like, what was the living situation like for you in Mozambique?
Absolutely. I was, like, honestly, like, all things considered, my house was nice. It was like a Chinese built, because the Chinese government has been involved in a lot of, like, you know, development plans and stuff. So they built a lot of schools in Mozambique in the late 90s, I think. So I was living in a house that was actually built by Chinese architects in my town. So it was really, it was nice. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually did have running water. That being said, the running water Whoa. Was rusty because the pipes were totally rusty. We had beautiful, in Pabani, where I was living, we had beautiful well water, like crystal clear, cholera-free well water because it was a very sandy terrain because it was right by the beach,
mm-hmm.
Which wasn't the case in a lot of other Mozambican cities. But man, like, damn it all to hell, it would go through the tubes and it would pick up all this rust. So, you know, we still had to pump that well to get our water. But as far as space, like it was a very nice house.
That's awesome.
But as far as living, like, you know, no grocery stores, we would have to walk to the market. It would be blazing hot. You'd have to get the stuff. You'd figure out how to do it. And like, you get used to it. We were hand washing our clothes, that kind of thing. We were cooking on charcoal for a little while before we got a propane tank.
And you were living with other...
Yeah, so I had a roommate, my roommate, John Wesley Chancellor, who's going to medical school. Good for him.
Congrats, John.
Yeah, congrats, John. Hope you hear this, buddy. I'm totally going to send this to him now.
Great. One more play
if
for
you
me.
Keep that.
Yeah.
yeah. But yeah, so I lived with a roommate, and then we actually had a site mate, Essence Bell, as well, who was living with us. Pabani Zambezia does not have Peace Corps volunteers anymore because they determined it was too far away. Because what I wanted to mention was the worst thing about my life there was that I would have to wake up at like 2, 3 a.m., pack myself into like this minibus and drive on a dirt road for 6 to 10 hours just to get to my spot from the main highway. There's only one highway that runs through Mozambique. And I had to do that almost every month because we didn't have a bank in my town. I had to go to pick up money. And it's all total cash economy. We had to go to pick up money. We would go get dry goods like lentils and like, you know, they had a Chinese supermarket, so we'd get Chinese noodles. I cooked a lot of Chinese food there, actually, which is a really interesting point, how multicultural different countries are, which we often don't think about.
No, I would never have thought that, you know, Mozambique would have had any sort of Chinese influence.
Exactly, but it does. Yeah. And it's really interesting. A lot of Indian influence as well. Obviously, a lot of Arab influence, which I absolutely loved about it personally, because, like, you know, as this conversation probably taught you, I'm really into that kind of thing, like multiculturalism and stuff, for all its positives and negatives. But anyways, like, that was the hardest part, was this ride. Uh-huh. And it was so, like, physically and emotionally, honestly, traumatic for me. But, like, I could leave, you know? Yeah. And I left. I don't do that anymore. I don't have to. My best friends there have to. And that's like the hardest thing, I think, and this is a common conversation amongst Peace Corps volunteers, is that we live there, we experience it, we can empathize so deeply, but ultimately at the end of the day, we leave and we have a better lifestyle. And even if, you know, even if things don't go so well in my life is probably going to be easier still than the lives mm-hmm. that they're living, that they continue to live, you know? So that...
But that thoughtfulness that you're able to have that, and I'm sure many Peace Corps volunteers have that thoughtfulness, it's still great to know that, you know, you can look back on it and be like, yeah, like, this was hard, but my life will never be that hard again. These people have to go through this every single day for their entire lives.
Absolutely. And I would rather know that than remain ignorant, mm-hmm. you know, even though it isn't a pleasant feeling to be like, well, you know, why am I better off? Mm. Luck of the draw.
Yeah. And it's important to have these types of conversations with people like me who I haven't experienced this. And again, I can only empathize, but, you know, at least knowing that there are these things out there and hearing your story and other people getting to hear your story, I think is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, that's why...
Because also, I wanted to just clarify, like, your story is, you know, specific. It's an American story, and you were able to go there. But by hearing your story, I get to slightly hear the stories of all those people who are there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we are really the cultural ambassadors to mm-hmm. our host countries, to everyday Americans. And that's actually... Peace Corps has three goals, right? The first goal is to do whatever primary project they're asking us to do whatever work.
Right.
The other two goals all have to do with cultural exchange. It's to teach host country nationals, we call them. So, like, in my case, teach Mozambicans about America and about American culture and about what it's like. And also for me to learn about Mozambican culture and then ultimately share it with the greater American community.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that was really, really interesting. I'm very glad we were able to talk about Peace Corps. I don't think people really get to experience the reason I really wanted to talk to you about it, I mean, despite this podcast being about Baltimore, is that, you know, that's an interesting thing going on. And, you know, you living here now, you had that experience and you can use that experience in your work with the Creative Alliance and with the community here.
Absolutely. And I just want to mention, like, Baltimore has an amazing return Peace Corps volunteer community that live and work here in Baltimore. I mean, Friends of Patterson Park, who I mentioned earlier, the nonprofit group that I work with a lot, both directors there, or program director, I don't know their titles, Katie Long and Jennifer Robinson, they're both return Peace Corps volunteers. And we have a really great community of them that work in the city, also because UMBC has a program called the Shriver Peace Worker Program, I think. And that gets Peace Corps volunteers to come in, do graduate studies and work in nonprofits in Baltimore.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, there are a lot of us here. And I think, you know, Baltimore's a challenging city. There's no way around that.
Right.
But I think that Peace Corps volunteers are uniquely positioned to to know how to work with the different communities in Baltimore, and also to be able to handle like some of the not so pretty sides.
Got it.
But be able to celebrate the beautiful sides.
And yeah, and we have that in Baltimore, both the celebrate the beautiful and the not beautiful. And yeah, you know, it's great to hear you embrace that as well. Yeah, so yeah, now I kind of want to turn to music.
Yeah,
turn back to Baltimore a
my
little
pleasure
bit. Yeah, so
plug zone.
Yeah, so let's just start there. What instruments do you play or specialize in?
So I'm a bassist. That's kind of what I studied since middle school, and then in college I studied like jazz bass and learned upright. In addition to that, I write my own songs and I sing, and I also play nylon string guitar. When I studied abroad in Spain, I got fortunate enough to get connected with a flamenco guitar teacher. So I learned some flamenco guitar.
Cool.
And then just through like self-study and like different little classes with friends that were much more talented than me, I got to learn. And just like with my songwriting, I really consider it kind of like it's a synthesis of everything that I've listened to in general, which is true of any artist. It's a synthesis of like everything I've listened to, but it's really like a synthesis of what I've loved over the years.
Yeah.
And I like to think personally, I've had kind of an eclectic music taste where, you know, I really like, I grew up listening to like classic rock all the time, but you know, my mom raised me on James Taylor, and she would have 93.1, the country music station, all the time. And I would always be like, I hate country, like no way, like no way, you know, like that's the way like certain boys are growing up, you know, and people in general. But it was a huge revelation for me like a couple months ago. I was like, you know what, like all that pop country really influenced me as an artist, which
like
I didn't
had that moment.
Yeah, I didn't like to admit, but like it's true with my songwriting. But I've also been really interested in jazz and listened to a lot of jazz and listened to a lot of like rock. And then like a huge part of like my interest has been like Latin American music. So like people like Jorge Drexler, who's like an amazing contemporary songwriter based out of Uruguay. And my other like musical hero, Silvio Rodriguez, who is a Cuban Nueva Trova folk artist from kind of like the Fidel era. Uh-huh. So like politically, you know, like that, but beautiful songs and beautiful playing and interest in flamenco. And then like, I love Paul Simon too.
Right.
You know, and just like, it's like a mix of all of these different influences. So I mean, if you'll allow me to just segue to like my groups.
Yeah, of course, know? Of course.
Yeah. So I play with a lot of groups here in Baltimore, but the two ones that I'm most excited about and I have like the strongest hand in are Tidal Shifts and my solo project, which is called Ari and the Buffalo Kings. So in Tidal Shifts, I play upright bass, and we play a style of music that is closest to something called math rock, which is like,
okay,
which is like really hard to explain, but it's basically rock music that is a little more intricate. It's a more intricate in time signature. It has like more difficult guitar playing techniques, and like kind of like there's a lot going on. However, we like to say that we're groove inspired math rock. So like it's this style that's very virtuosic, but it's in a way that like we really get like a groove going, and
okay,
you can really feel it in your body, and you uh-huh can really vibe to it. I mean, we're called Tidal Shifts, and people have said this to me after we play, like listening to our music, it's like having waves wash over you, where it's like calm and then it like gets kind of heavy and like intricate, and then like it's calm again.
Cool.
So
math rock.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, different groups they use that title. So like Chan, Toe, different other groups like, and I'm going to miss like Elephant Gym. So like you can just like check it out. It's a whole community of artists.
You know, when you first told me it was math rock, I thought it was going to be some sort of like education.
I know, like equations.
Yeah.
We like to make a joke. Like, one of the guitarists in my band, Tamba, has this joke where he pulls up his calculator, which like his phone, it'll show like all the calculations he's done. And he's like, this is our set list. And it'll just be like 2 divided by 7, you know,
That's funny.
Kind of thing. But no. It's just a determination. Honestly, it's like a little nerdy, like, that's why like the math thing comes
okay
in. But we like to think that it like we're what I'm excited about with Tidal Shifts is that we use a lot of influences from our interests and our lives as well. So in a lot of our songs, we add some jazz elements. Mm-hmm. I have studied jazz. Our drummer, Sky Paddock, he went to school at Towson for jazz, so he actually majored in jazz drums. So he kind of brings that element to mm-hmm. it. You know, we have some R&B elements in our music and in our songwriting. I lived in Mozambique. Tamba's family is from Sierra Leone. So we have some like Afrobeats influence working in there, you know? And it's mainly instrumental, but it means that we can really explore different parts of sound and different parts of genres and like bring it in.
Cool.
And it's like, I'm like so excited about it. And I think that It's music that I would like to say has a high nutritional value, you know, but it's still accessible and people can still get into it. You know, sometimes music with high nutritional value, like classical music, some people might be like, oh, I don't know if I can get into that.
Yeah.
You know, whereas something with lower nutritional value, you can easily listen to. But I think we're right there in like a good space where we offer a lot. But it's still accessible, even right. to non-music people.
How long have you been playing with them?
I got really lucky when I got home, like basically like since last October. Yeah, they needed a bassist. So they've been around for maybe like 4 years, I want to say.
Oh, great.
But they needed a bassist. So I got in and we wrote all new songs. So something I really wanted to mention was that we have a new single out and cool. It is called... it's available on, or it is, or will be, depending on the timing, because mm-hmm. we're still working on the album art. There's so much, you know, involved. But it's called "Me and the Void Go Way Back."
Cool.
And it's by the band Tidal Shifts, and you can find it on Spotify. You can find it on iTunes, basically anywhere, any streaming platform. We'll also have a Bandcamp, so you can find us on Bandcamp and download it. And that's a great way to check out our sound. We're also playing a lot in Baltimore. So we'll be at the Reverb August 24th, starting at, we'll probably be playing around like 9 or 10. And we'll have plenty of shows in the future. So I invite everyone to follow us on Instagram at Tidal Shifts and also on Facebook, Tidal Shifts as well.
And so that's Tidal Shifts. You're also in a band, like a little singer-songwriter type project, right? Ari and the Buffalo Kings.
Yes.
And so I'm assuming you're Ari.
Yeah, exactly. I am.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, I like before I even talk about this, I just want to thank the musicians that work with me on it because I mean.
You're a diva.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just want to thank all the people. No, because really, without them, it wouldn't be Ari and the Buffalo Kings. It would just be songs that I've written, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, Gino Hanna, Jim Hanna, Danielle Williams, Zen, even my friends Daisy Castro and Zach Silverstein. Like, I just want to give them shout-outs because, like, in my recent experiences with them, they really make the music come alive. So... the way it started, I mean, I've always, because I had an interest in guitar, and honestly, as like emotional therapy for myself, like since middle school, high school, I've been playing songs on guitar and singing, you know, which isn't totally different from my bass playing, but it's kind of like it serves different needs, you know. I like to think I'm a very emotional bass player. I like to think that still has a lot of emotion in it and stuff, but for me... because of growing up listening to a lot of singer-songwriters and really loving their music, that's how I express a lot of emotions that I feel
right.
and ultimately have learned to connect to. So, you know, through my learning and through my playing and studying, I eventually got to a point where I was like, well, I want to write my own songs, you know? And, you know, I went through some pretty tough times last fall and went through a lot of difficult emotions, and I was finding myself like playing like songs from bands I knew, like Avett Brothers. I love the Avett Brothers. Right. And their songs are so sad, but like, you know, I was singing, but they really hit on like kind of like a very energetic, like it's sad, but it's like, it's still outpouring. And then I was like, this emotion's so strong, I can write my own music to this. So like I wrote the song Mr. Atom Bomb, which, you know, I'm in the recording process now. So hopefully, you know, I definitely invite people to like us on Facebook, Ari and the Buffalo Kings. And you can follow me on Instagram, Ari_Buffalo Kings, which is my personal account. But I, you know, it's a personal band. So,
right.
Yeah. So anyways, like I wrote outside of that experience last fall, while I was in Peace Corps, I wrote a lot of songs.
I'm sure, yeah.
I had a lot of time, you know, and a lot of experiences to kind of like to work through, right? So I came home with a plethora of songs, and I also got a lot of time to practice guitar. So I got a little better at guitar in the way where I felt comfortable to perform in front of people. So I came home and just like looked for opportunities. Thankfully, because of the crowd I ran with in St. Mary's, I knew a lot of people already in the Baltimore music community. So I got to get out there and play. And I was starting to get like some reception for my songs. Like people would listen, and like my music's not perfect. I'm not a perfect guitar player. I'm not a perfect singer. But something that I do think I do well is I am honest and I am genuine. And I, you know, I put out what is me. And I think that people, you know, in a world where like inauthenticity is unfortunately a little more present than not, people really resonate with that and they vibrate with it. So, you know, I started doing that and I started getting good reception. And then like, I started this out thinking my friends, because my friends were like, listen, we want to play with you. Like, this is cool.
That's cool.
Let's do it. Yeah. And like, that's, you know, we had a big show a couple months ago at Zissimo's, which was our first big performance as a band playing my song. And I was just like blown away. Cause you know, you play your songs, you get it good, but then like to have really talented musicians accompanying you on it and making it sound like something real.
Right.
You know, it was amazing. So that's that project. And it's all like personal songs and just like kinda I like to think of it as like it's my, you know, it's kind of my thoughts and emotions from my personal experience and my observations.
Right.
And I like to think that I have a pretty interesting perspective on life because of the various experiences I've had. So I'm hoping that it's something that people really vibe with. So I'm in the recording process at Station North Sound with William Herman. If anyone's interested in studio work, he runs a wonderful studio. He's such a good producer. He has a really great ear, for music and just, like the art in general. And so we're in the recording process now. So hopefully, I'm hoping by spring 2020, we can be releasing a whole album.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I will be looking forward to that.
Yeah, man. I'm really excited.
What does the Baltimore music scene look like?
Baltimore music scene is the weirdest and coolest thing that goes on. I mean, like I said earlier, I think because people are so open to different things here, it really opens like a whole world of like weird and wonderful experiences. So like, I think it's beautiful because it's like people that really live their lives here and are sharing and expressing their emotions. Cause ultimately that's what music is. It's just, it's expressed emotions.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and you find that Baltimore as a whole is supportive of its music scene.
I like to think so. I think we could do better. You know,
yeah.
I think that, you know, the people with money could pump a little more money into it. And I think
that's art everywhere.
Exactly. Like, absolutely. And, you know, I think what, you know, I'm in no way an authority on this subject at all. But I think that like if we're just talking about the United States in general, much less the world, Baltimore gets a bad rap. Nobody knows of all the great art that goes on here, even though we have such great institutions like MICA, like people generally only know about Johns Hopkins, which, you know, we're lucky that they do anyways, but like we have so much here to offer. You know, something that my good friends are putting together are these micro shows, which is like 7 to 9 p.m. kind of things where they program it in a space called City Beach. Feel free to reach out to me about that or reach out to one of the coordinators, Gino Hanna. And the whole point of that, they get live recordings of the bands playing and live video. And we're like, the whole idea of that is that we're trying to elevate Baltimore, local Baltimore artists, because if people saw them, they would love them.
Right.
You know, and it's just that the talent scouts in LA or New York or whatever aren't coming out here to find it. Or if they are, maybe they're not seeing the right people, you know. But, and even if they wouldn't like us, it's still really cool. Like, screw what they think anyways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
You're still getting to make the music that you love.
Like. Yeah. And maybe I just lost a job because of that. Like, hey, I heard you bad-mouthing the big guy, like some New York executive. But I don't care. Like, you know. It's like, you know, there's just so much good stuff here. And people, in general, like, should feel really proud of it and should go out and support. And I think we would all be happier in our lives anyways if we went out more and like had more lived experience.
Yeah, see live music, see live comedy, see live
art. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because like, no doubt, Netflix is super nice. Like, who doesn't love to do a little NNC, you know? Who doesn't love that? But it's much too easy to just do that. And you're missing out on life. And like, a lot of studies show that you feel better after you go out and have an experience, you know? You feel better after you watch live music, after you watch live comedy, whatever. It's just like going to the forest. You need the forest. You need time with humans, and you need time seeing things live. Because watching a band on YouTube is cool. Listening to it on your headphones is cool on your drive to work. But seeing it live, it's the closest thing to magic we have.
Except for magic.
Except for magic, of course. Exactly.
You also mentioned to me previously that you're working on like a chamber music series.
Yeah, we're trying to get this together. So it's this really cool idea. Zach Silverschlag, a really good friend of mine, is the principal trumpet of the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra. So he's really in the classical music scene. And I don't know how much you know about this, but the BSO, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, is having a lot of budget problems and stuff. It's just becoming clear that in American culture in general, we don't value classical music that much. I've heard arguments that like, well, that's because it's not really our music. We have our own music, which is folk and blues and rock and roll and whatever. And that's fine, but there is no doubt that classical music is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And if there are people that dedicate their entire lives to it and like, have a like a crazy mastery of it, and we should be supporting them. And I was lucky in college to have the experience where I went to Italy and was part of a music festival there, and I got to play with the Romanian Symphony Orchestra in a church, in an old cathedral.
That's probably beautiful.
Yeah, and let me qualify that with, I had no business playing with the Romanian Symphony Orchestra. It was my first year playing upright bass. I didn't even know how to bow. These huge Romanians were just looking at me like, what? But it was amazing because, like, the sound. And my dad went, and my dad's deaf. And so he doesn't experience music the same way you and I would. But he even, like, with his hearing aids and with the vibration, he was like, that was amazing. Like, so I think classical music, when you see it live, it's so much more impressive and beautiful and you know, in Portuguese, we'd say espantoso, like it frightens you in a good way. Like it's awesome in the way, like in the biblical sense of the word, that, like awesome.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And like, you know, maybe an issue right now is that when you go to the Meyerhof or you go see like, not to call the Meyerhof out, like, you know, you go to what would normally be a classical venue, it feels a little disconnected. It feels a little like, you know, okay, am I at a museum? Like, I don't know. Like, it can be harder for people to really engage with. So we have this idea to provide chamber music in intimate settings in the same way that we would play, like, tidal shifts would play, like, in an intimate, like, house setting or an intimate venue. And we would have chamber music be played and then have a local artist on the same bill as the chamber musicians. And maybe like try to program it in a way that the chamber musicians are playing music that somehow is involved with the local artist musician or the local artist's music. And then because me, Gino Hanna, Zach Silverschlag, Gino's also working with us on this, because we're all musicians, we're thinking, okay, well, you know what? Let's go a step further. Let's write out music for the chamber musicians to play along with the local bands.
Yeah, so it'll be a whole, like, experience.
Exactly. And our hope is that people walk away from that being like, you know, I love, you know, let's just use title shifts. I love title shifts. Super cool. But that chamber music was like awesome. You know, like that. I never really experienced that because people don't. You know, no, I don't know about your parents. My parents would never be like, hey, let's go check out the VSO.
Yeah.
My grandfather took me a little bit when I was a kid, but you can't truly appreciate it when you're like 10.
No, not at all. You know? Cool. Yeah, that's great. So, you know, I just want to, you know, rewind all the way back to the beginning real quick.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, you know, we're going to go down the line. How can somebody get involved with the Creative Alliance?
Yeah. So with Creative Alliance, you can go to creativealliance.org. We have an active Facebook page and Instagram page, so just follow us to keep in touch. We also have email lists, so I believe on the website you can find a subscription for that, and we can email you about any sort of program that you're interested in.
Awesome. And then if someone wants to volunteer for the Peace Corps, they just go to the website, go through the application process.
Absolutely. Feel free to reach out to me with any questions you might have. There are a lot of really great resources to learn about that online as well.
And if someone wants to get involved in general in the Baltimore music or art scene, what do you have any advice for how they can do that?
Yeah, man, I would just say get out there and talk about it. Like, you're not going to know about it unless you bring up that you're interested. And when you see events, go for it, because you're going to meet people that... That's what I always say about Baltimore. We have so much going on. You just have to know about it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's a really great point.
Absolutely. So, like, if you're listening to this and you're like, I really like to make music, but I just don't know anyone, look up, like, especially in Hamden, like, see what's happening in Zissimos that week. Mm-hmm. See what's happening at the 13.5 Vine Bar. Or see what's playing at the Auto Bar. See what's playing at Metro Gallery. See what's going on at Creative Lines. Go. Experience it, talk to people, and you might meet someone that is into the same crazy music that you're into mm-hmm. and plays accordion and you play the pan flute and you want to do it, you know?
Yeah, definitely get out there. I would also say just look for local artists performing, because they obviously could use the support. They could use the support both financially and for their fan base. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. So
yeah.
I really, really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to speak with me today.
Absolutely.
And, I'm super excited to share this with everybody.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to Charm City. If you are interested in being interviewed, or if you're a local business interested in sponsoring us, please reach out to charmcitypod@gmail.com.